King Lord in his abode, and this is August 7th, 2010 at the Manor. Bhaktin class. Well, I'm going to start out here by probably totally confusing you and making everything 10 times more difficult than it was before. And that is, when we talk about the Lord in his abode, we can draw a picture, just like you've probably seen on the front cover of the Bhagavatam. There's a picture of the universe, picture of all of reality, and you may see some posters like that also that show the whole cosmos. The problem is that those pictures show something existing as if it were in material space. And, of course, when we talk about Krishna and his abode, our mind will tend to categorize this talk in terms of material space. There's this planet over here, and then there's this planet over here, and in that way. However, we understand that when illusion is manifested, when the illusory energy is created, that the first state of matter that is created is space. So Srila Prabhupada in this uses the word elements. He uses the word material elements. In the modern day, when we talk about material elements, we mean something that when you take it down to an atom, it's still the same thing. For example, gold. This is gold. Of course, it's only about half gold. But this is gold, and if you broke this down all the way down to an atom, you would still have gold. Whereas water is not like that. Water is made of hydrogen and oxygen. So if I break water down to a molecule, I still have water. But if I break it down to the atoms, I don't have water anymore. You right? We all know that. You remember that in school? Okay, so the scientists, when they say an element, they mean something that when you make it smaller, 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 down to an atom, it's still the same thing. When Prabhupada uses the term elements, he means something different. He means what the modern scientists call states of matter. So states of matter are solids, liquids, and gases, and then the states of matter often change because of heat or cold. So another main thing in the states of matter is fire or temperature, and then all matter exists in space. So right now in this room, we have solid objects like this table, there's liquid. And of course, our bodies are full of liquid. You've got liquid in the cups. There's even some water vapor in the air. Then there's gases. There's nitrogen, hydrogen, oxygen, many other gases that we can't see. But if we blow on something, then we can see the effect of the gas. And of course, I can feel the effect of the gases by being aware of my breathing. And all of these exist in space. Now, space is the most subtle of the gross states of matter. You can't really see space. You can tell space somewhat by hearing, just like some creatures, they send out sound like bats and dolphins, and they can. We mostly understand space by the boundaries. So because I can see the walls in this room, I understand that inside here there's space. I'm not seeing the space directly. And I position items in space. This is over here, and this is over here, and this is over there. And a lot of the way I understand the world is by where something is in space. I have to locate it. One of the first things we ask a person is, where do you live? I've noticed that if you meet a stranger, you can ask them, where do you live? You can't ask the stranger necessarily, what is your name? Are you married? But you can ask the stranger where you live. And it's one of the first things that we we think of with any person or object, or where is it? Where is it? No, space is part of the illusory energy. It is the first of the most subtle of the gross material elements. Space is created as part of the material world. Now, even in the material world, on higher planets, space exists differently. Just like time exists differently on other parts of the universe. How we experience space and time here is not how space and time are experienced other places. Even Albert Einstein said this, that space and time would change in different parts of the universe. And when you're talking about the spiritual world, you're talking about something that has nothing to do with either material time or material space. So when we are trying to understand where Krishna lives, Krishna's abode, we'll use the word where. But we can't really talk about Krishna's abode in terms of space, because there isn't space. So, of course, we draw a picture as if things are in space. We'll talk about it as if it's in space, because we have to. We don't have any other language. We only have the language of time and space. But really, that doesn't apply to Krishna's abode. It just doesn't. It's before and beyond both time and space. So that's something to keep in mind. And I realize that if you say that there's a place that doesn't exist in space, that makes no sense to us at all. How can there be a place? If there's a place, it must be where? You must be able to put it someplace. All right. The Vedas themselves and the Purusha Shukta prayers talk about how the spiritual existence is the majority of existence and the material existence is only one-fourth. So the entire material creation is only about one-fourth. And you really can't, again, talk even about one-fourth because the spiritual is unlimited. So you really, I'm going to say, give me half of a cookie, I can only say that because the cookie has its limits. How can I say, give me half of an unlimited cookie? That it doesn't really make any sense. Still, the material creation is considered to be about a fourth. In other words, it's the minority. Most of existence is spiritual. Only a very small portion of existence is material. So the spiritual realm is made of Brahman. We were talking yesterday about Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. So the spiritual world, everything is Brahman. And the light of Brahman is everywhere. In this world, we're cut off from the light of Brahman. We're in a cloud. And as soon as the sun goes down, everything becomes dark. The world, the natural state of this world is darkness. Whereas the natural state of the spiritual existence is light. And not only is everything light, but everything is light. And everything is alive, everything is a person, and everything is brilliant. And bright and full of light. And this in the spiritual realm, there are many, 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 many planets, an unlimited number of planets, in which Krishna lives as Narayana, as the king, with his queen Lakshmi. And these planets are full of cities and towns and where different residents live. They don't have any work to do. It's like they're always on a vacation, always on a festival. Everything is all their desires are fulfilled, and they worship the Lord and Lakshmi as a supreme king. They live in basically a perfect society, and they have whatever forms they want. They can also have forms that look like Krishna and look like Lakshmi, if they want to. And they exhibit different degrees of powers and opulence. And they have their activities, but their activities are for pleasure only. Just like right now, you know, in this body, most of my activities are for the bodily maintenance. People are working hard all day so that they'll have a roof at night so that they'll have food to eat and clothes to wear. But people also do a lot of activities that are not for bodily maintenance. People spend a lot of time, even in this world, watching sports or playing sports, right? Playing games, just being with their friends. So in the spiritual world, people are engaged only in play activities. They don't have material bodies to maintain. And those activities are full of variety and they never become old. And on each planet, the Lord has a somewhat different form. So each planet, the residents are seeing him in a particular way, as they like. Then there's also, in the spiritual world, a planet for Lord Ramachandra. If you want to read what I consider the best description of the material and spiritual world, I would suggest you read Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Part 2, which is just a lovely book. It'll take you all to get through it. It's not a short book. Brihad.
Brihad,
B-R-H-A-D or H-A-T. I'm not sure if it's a T or a D.
So B-R-H.
H-A, either D or T.
Which book?
Brihad Bhagavat Amrita. Bhagavat Amrita. And part 2 describes one person's journey through from this planet, then to other planets in this universe, and then beyond to the spiritual world. And it's really...
It's
beyond to the spiritual world. So it's not a short book, but it's really fun to read. It's very enjoyable to read, very easy to read, very fast to read, and it gives I think the best description all in one place that you'll find anywhere. So anyway, on these spiritual planets there's all different forms of the Lord. Then there's a planet of Krishna as Ramchandra with his wife Sita and his devotees as monkeys. And then there's this planet of Goloka Vrindavan. Goloka means the planet of the cows, Goloka Dham. And Goloka Dham, that planet itself, is an infinite planet. And there's three areas there, Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. In Dwarka and Mathura, Krishna is there as the king or as a prince. And in Vrindavan, he's also there as a prince. But Dwarka and Mathura are cities, and Vrindavan is the country. And there, different devotees serve the Lord in his form as Krishna rather than Narayan in their different relationships. And in the Vrindavan portion, they actually forget that he's God. So everywhere else in the spiritual world, in where Ramachandra is, in Ayodhya, the other Vaikuntha planets, everyone is knowing that I'm serving God. But in Vrindavan of Goloka Dham, and even to some extent in Dwarka and Mathura, but mostly in Vrindavan, Krishna is just there as a friend. It's really... just like a president or prime minister likes some time to go to the country and just be with his family, where nobody's saying, excuse me, Mr. President, would you like, you know, people just calling him whatever his name is, you know, Bob or George, and just being friendly. We all like that too. We all like to go home where we can just relax. So Krishna, Goloka Vrindavan, Vrindavan especially, is where Krishna's just cowherd boy. Everyone loves him as Krishna. They don't really care whether he's God or not. It's not the kind of relationship they have with him. So the most intimate planet is Goloka Vrindavan, where you have Vrindavan, which is the most intimate place, then Mathura and Dwarka, where Krishna is there in the city as the prince. He's also the prince in Vrindavan. Then in Ayodhya and in the Vaikunthas, he's as a king. It's interesting that in the most intimate place, Krishna is there as a prince. And in Vaikuntha, he's there as the king. Then you have the general effulgence of the Vaikuntha world. Of course, in Vrindavan, it appears to be day and night. Krishna appears to have night pastimes and day pastimes, and all the different seasons are also there. Then, but on the edge of the spiritual world, there is the place of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is Krishna who consorts with matter. Krishna not in his full manifestation. It's not fully Krishna. And Lord Shiva is there with his consort Parvati or Durga.
And there, sorry, where is Lord Shiva again?
It's in a realm between the material world and the spiritual world. Now, Lord Shiva also exists in the material world, but his primary residence is between the material and the spiritual world. And those are all liberated souls that live there, but they're worshipping Shiva as God. And most of them don't know about Vaikuntha. They don't know about the whole spiritual world. Then you have the coverings over the material world. And these coverings are made of false ego, mind, intelligence, space, gases, fire, liquids, and solids. And in each of those coverings, there's a different deity who's residing over those coverings, and there you find the subtle forms of material energy. Then within the coverings is the material world, where there's many, 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 many material universes. We're in one of those universes. And those universes manifest and then are unmanifest with the breathing of the cord. Now, in addition to that, in the material world, there's also a planet of Vishnu. There's a planet of Shiva. There's a planet also of Vishnu. And then there's also the place like in India, Vrindavan in India, or Mayapur in India, which is the representation of the spiritual within the material, and which even when the material world is destroyed, those places remain. Although they're covered, to our vision sees them as a covered place. So that's about half the time, and I think I've pretty much, let's see if there's anything else here that, okay, I want to us talk about Radharani. So, it's interesting also, Krishna's in the Vaikuntha planets. The Lord is there as Narayana with his queen Lakshmi. And sometimes it's explained that he has three queens. It's Shri, Bhu, and Nila. Shri means Lakshmi, Bhu means the earth. I'm not sure about Nila. Sometimes it says that Tulsi is also one of his queens. Usually he's just described with Lakshmi, but sometimes he's shown with two or three wives as Narayana. As Lord Ramachandra, he only has one wife, Sita. In Dwarka and Mathura, of course, Krishna has 16,000 wives, or perhaps in the spiritual world, many, many more. And he lives with each of them individually. They're all his queens. But in Vrindavan, Krishna is not married. So Krishna in Vrindavan is a young, unmarried boy, only like 15 years old. He's not married yet. But of course, he has his consort, Radharani. And Krishna's consort Radharani is in the form of a girlfriend rather than a wife. And it's a secret girlfriend. It's not, although everybody knows Radharani is the queen of Vrindavan, still it's not an open relationship. So that's, and all of the queens and consorts of the Lord, they're all expansions of Radharani. In fact, I was just listening to Prabhupada say that all of us are expansions of Radharani. Radharani is the female part of Krishna. We worship God not just as male, but as male and female. And really all the living entities, Prabhupada said, are part of Radharani. They're meant to assist Radharani in serving Krishna. So sometimes, of course, we say we're all expansions of Krishna. Both of those are true, because Krishna and Radharani are not different persons. But Radharani also exists in her own as the energy of the Lord, as the supreme energy of the Lord. And she's really the, how would you say? Prabhupada says in the Vaikuntha planets, everyone sees Vishnu as being more beautiful than Lakshmi, but in Vrindavan, everyone sees Radharani as more beautiful than Krishna. And they consider that Vrindavan belongs to Radharani. So, anything you want to discuss on this?
So, for example, it's impossible in the spiritual world to go from one spiritual planet to the other.
No, you can go wherever you want.
For example, you're in Vaikuntha, you can go to Vrindavan.
To go higher, of course, is always difficult. Just like if I want to go any place that's at my level or lower, that's easy. If I want to go to a higher level, there may be some additional qualification. So the residents of the spiritual world are all liberated, they're all free. Mm-hmm. So they can go wherever they want. Mm-hmm. I was just hearing this morning Prabhupada saying that the soul naturally wants to travel. and go to different places and see different things. It's natural to have some curiosity and some desire for movement.
But they don't need any visa or anything.
Don't need any visa. So the residents of the spiritual world can go wherever they like. Now, the residents of Vaikuntha, though, many of them don't even know about Vrindavan. It's not their their mood or their taste. So for them to go into those into a higher realm, when I say higher, again, I don't mean in space, but in a more intimate realm. It's just like if I know you here in the class, if you're going to invite me into your room to be your close friend, you have to invite me. Just because we have a relationship in the class doesn't mean that I can come sit in your room as your friend. So having a relationship with Krishna in Vaikuntha doesn't mean I can just go immediately and have a relationship in Vrindavan. But you can. I mean, there are certainly living entities who can go from Vaikuntha to Vrindavan. Prabhupada says that nectar devotion. And that's also explained in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And certainly any resident from the highest realms can go anywhere. But the residents of Vaikuntha can go anywhere. They can go to any other Vaikuntha planet. They can come visit the material world. It's explained in Brihad Bhagavatamrita that some of the residents of Vaikuntha come to the material universes to save anybody who's chanting or hearing the holy name at the time of their death. So, yeah, they come out of their own free will. Just like I was speaking to someone the other day who was raised in Africa. I said, what would you like to do with your life? She said, I'd really like to help the poor people in Africa. So even though she's here in London in a very comfortable life, she's thinking, let me go back and help those people who are not comfortable. So the residents of Vaikuntha sometimes want to come here to help us. But no, they have the freedom, they can travel, they can travel wherever they want, they can get whatever they want, and they can do whatever they want. That's what liberated means. The only restriction, Bhaktivinoda Tagore says, is you have to have love and no envy. Those are the only rules. And love. On the positive side, you have to have love, and on the negative side, you have to have no envy. Other than that, there's no rules.
And we can see in the spiritual world, we can see everything which is happening in the material world.
Yeah, you can see whatever you want. I mean, do you necessarily want to? It's just like I can go see how people are doing in the jail here in London if I want to. If I want to, I can go visit the jail, I can go visit the mental hospital, I can visit the cancer ward. I don't generally. I generally don't. I mean, in my personal life, some people do, but in my personal life, I don't usually. Just let me go to the hospital, let me go to the mental hospital, let me go to the prison. But you certainly can. I'm certainly free to do that.
And try to protect
if you want to,
like your angels?
The angels are mostly higher beings in this universe.
But still, they are in the spiritual world where we are.
What most people call angels are beings in this world who are higher than us. They have higher bodies than us. And it's a different kind of body. So you and I could have been an angel, probably were, in another life, and we can be an angel again in another life if we want to be. So those are higher beings. And it's described many places in the Shastra that the higher beings in the world protect specifically the earth planet. That the earth is considered a very special place. It's where Krishna incarnates. Of course, he incarnates other places also. But it's where he incarnates, and this is the realm of karma. And we're pretty weak here. So there's usually a battle or a fight between the powerful evil beings in the universe and the powerful good beings in the universe to protect us. But definitely there are higher good beings that are protecting us. Most of those are from this world. Most of those are not from the spiritual world. Well, there are also certainly residents of the spiritual world who, as Sanatana Goswami describes, come here to rescue people and help people and save people. So that's also true. Both are true. So if somebody says, you know, I've seen an angel or I was saved by an angel, was that somebody from the spiritual world? Maybe. It could have just been a higher being in this world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like like if your car breaks down on the road, somebody from some government agency may come and help you. So if you have some problem in this world, some higher being from within the universe may come and help you.
And once you leave this world, you can to go back to the spiritual world, can you find again some, I don't know, soul that you were, you knew before, or either on the material world?
Sure, of course.
I know they know each other, they have some intimate relationship.
Sure. Yes, mm-hmm. Definitely. There's
it's
evidence.
Difficult to comprehend, to understand.
I think it's impossible to fully understand. I really think it's impossible to fully understand. I really do. Except as it's revealed to us. I don't think just by using our material mind and intelligence we can understand it completely. We can get some idea. We can get some idea. I mean, it's something like, you know, when you were 6 years old and you went to a wedding. I mean, how much can you really understand about a man and woman being in love when you're 6 years old? You really can't. You have some idea. But you really can't. You know, you have to be 16 years old before you can actually understand. And I think it's very much the same, that when our consciousness is at a certain level, that we can understand to some extent. We can understand to some extent.
And they have all different personalities.
Yes. Personality means likes and dislikes. And
does it always mean that when you have difficulties, you're getting some higher consciousness?
Excuse me?
Can you make like consideration that if you have a difficulties, you're normally getting something higher consciousness, or it's not?
If I'm getting difficulties, am I getting higher consciousness?
Yeah, because you said to go higher is always difficult.
Oh. No, take it the other way. If you want to go higher, there's usually some further qualification that you need. It doesn't work. It's just like if it's raining outside, there are clouds in the sky. But you cannot say, if there's clouds in the sky, then it's raining. So just because something you're having some difficulty doesn't mean you're going higher. If you're going higher, there's going to be some additional qualification that you have to have. I don't know if that's necessarily, you always call it difficulty. But not all difficulty takes us higher. It depends what you do with the difficulty. They don't, you know. No. You can have lots of difficulty and be going nowhere. Or if you have some difficulty in your life and you just become angry and depressed, then you're going down. But if you to go to a higher level, you have to have additional qualification. Let's just put it that way.
But to obtain this qualification, you have to return to the material world and do the...
No, not necessarily. You can go directly.
How we can distinguish what is happening?
Well, it's your reaction to it's our how we react to situations. It's not the situations. The situations in themselves are neutral. It's what do you do with them? When there's difficulty in our lives, and everybody has difficulty in their lives, we're lucky if we have one whole day go by with no difficulty. You know, at least some small difficulty. There's a wasp that flies in your room, or you know, you didn't hear your alarm clock or something. Somebody says something mean to you. So it's how do you see it? How do you interpret it? It says in the 11th canto that all sufferings come from the mind. Lord Buddha had a saying, pain is inevitable and suffering is a choice. Well, there will be pain. But do I interpret it as suffering? I mean, if a child has something, if they pick up some object that will harm them, it's sharp, and you take that away from them. When you take it away from them, they'll think that you're hurting them, but actually you're helping them. So how do they see it? How do they interpret it? And sometimes people get a lot of money suddenly. They win the lottery or they get some big inheritance all of a sudden. And they think, oh, this is wonderful. But many times when that happens, they'll say later that was the worst day of their life. Because after that point, people became envious of them. Everybody was just interested in their money. And they went from living a simple, happy life to always worrying about how they're going to protect this money. And I mean, one of my devotee friends just got a big chunk of money. And he said, now all I'm thinking about is money. How am I going to take care of this money? How am I going to take care of this money? How am I going to take care of this money? So it's how you interpret things. Is getting a lot of money a good thing or a bad thing? Is getting sick a good thing or a bad thing? You know, it's...
So our action should be according to justice. Is that what I'm telling you?
Certainly. And we should also see everything that happens to us as... How can I use this to bring me closer to Krishna? How can I use this to bring me closer to spiritual life? Whatever it is. Whether it's good or bad from the material point of view. How can I use this situation to get me where I want to go? I'll tell you a funny story. It's a true story. So there was this man that worked for a company in New York City, and his boss told him, I want you to go up to Albany, New York, which is several hours' drive away. So I'd like you to take the train to Albany and meet with the head of this other company and get him to sign a contract with our company. He said he's interested. I want you to go and convince him and get him to sign the contract. He said, it must be done today because he's only going to be there today. We've got to do it today. So the man starts going to the train station, and on the way, there's a parade. You know what a parade is? And the street. So he can't get across the street to the train station. So first he starts praying. He said, dear Lord, please let me get through the parade. And then he thinks, that's not a very good prayer. Why don't I pray, dear Lord, help me to catch a train to this other city? And he thinks, he sees, I'm not going to get through this parade. Long, long, long parade. So I'll go to another train station. He turns around and he's praying, Lord, let me get to the train station. And he thinks, no, it's not good. Dear Lord, let me catch the train. He gets to the other train station. And as he gets there, the train is just leaving. And he thinks, well, I should pray, Lord, let me get the contract. Then he sits down and he's thinking for a while. And he says, no, my dear Lord, let me just have faith that you're going to take care of me. I'm going to pray to you just for faith. And then he became peaceful. He was praying to cross the parade. He was praying to get to the train station. He was praying to catch the train. He was praying to get the contract. Then he said, just please give me faith. And he became very peaceful. So he's sitting there in the train station wondering what he's going to do because the next train is going to be too late. He's going to miss his meeting. And as he's sitting there, another man comes and sits down next to him and says, this is a true story. Says, were you wanting to go to Albany? He says, yes. He said, oh, so you missed the train too? Yes, I missed the train. So they're talking for a while, and the man starts explaining. He said, yeah, I was supposed to go there for a meeting, and then I started praying to God, and then as soon as I just asked for faith, I became happy. So of course you can guess that the man sitting next to him was the person he was supposed to meet, and he ended up, of course, getting the contract without going anyplace. My point is that he decided he was going to see the situation differently. Okay, this is an opportunity to depend on Krishna. And as soon as he depended on Krishna, he was happy. And that's what needs to be done. I mean, I've read so many stories of people where, you know, their child is dying from some disease or their mother is dying, and they're praying, Lord, please save my child. And eventually they say, whatever you want to do, and then they're at peace. Then whether the person lives or dies, they're at peace. I just read a very nice story from Radhana Swami like this, where he met this woman at the airport whose husband and children had died in an accident, I think, and she had cancer, and she was going to get some treatment, but the plane was late, and it was her only chance to get treatment. Now, if she missed the plane, she wasn't going to get to the treatment facility on time. And as he was talking to her, she let go, and she just decided, you know, whether I live or die is not important. What's important is that I have a relationship with God. And she became happy. So we can use the good things in life. You know, somebody gives me my favorite food. Somebody gives me some clothes I wanted. I meet a really nice person. I have a nice place to stay. Somebody gives me some money. Whatever we're thinking is a nice thing in life. We can see that this is Krishna's gift and become and feel love for him, affection for him. And then when things don't happen, we see how this is also Krishna's gift. And then you can make spiritual advancement when everything's going well, and you can make spiritual advancement when everything's going badly. Don't think I can only make spiritual advancement when there's difficulty, and don't think I can only make spiritual advancement when everything's nice. Prabhupada talks about a good businessman. He says a good businessman makes money when the prices are going up, and he makes money when the prices are going down. He tells the story of a man in India, during a time of economic difficulty. And there were many rats, and the government was giving money for collecting rats because they were causing disease. So he was collecting rats, and he ended up getting so much money from collecting rats that he started his own business, and he became very successful. So even though it was at a time when the economy was poor, he found, okay, let me find some way. So how can I profit in this situation? So that's the question we ask. How can I profit in this situation? How can I profit? Not always let me find the best situation, because that's not possible. Sometimes you can find a good situation, and sometimes you can't find a good situation.
So difficult always to have our idea of how is the best situation for us.
Yes.
Even they seems, both of them seems from Krishna, especially for us, we are here in the temple. Everything is from Krishna.
Yes.
At least.
Yes, that's
like that, but it's so difficult because, for example, you have some personal taste that you, if you do this service, for example, for Krishna, you feel that you will be, you can give more from you for to Krishna. But the situation sometimes is not like that. You do something else, what is need.
Well, ideally, as far as our service, We should really try our best to have a service that fits with our nature.
Sometimes it doesn't.
Well, that's true for everybody. Nobody can do what's their perfect nature all the time. But as far as possible, we should try to have a service that fits our nature. As far as we can. Everybody has to just do things that are needed sometimes. But if you're only doing things that are needed, then you need to make some change.
Yeah, become too sour.
Yeah,
you
can't.
Become too sour.
That's.
But how you can explain this to non-poets? They don't understand. They see just you like object that you have to feed to make the machine working well.
Well, you could try Bhagavad Gita. You could say you're giving me all this training in Bhagavad Gita, and that's what it says in the Bhagavad Gita. It says in the Bhagavad Gita two times. You have to serve according to your nature. So, I mean, there's also people, we have to do what's needed. Everybody has to do that. even if a person's an artist and they're painting all day, they may still have to cut the grass at their house. Yeah, everyone has to do some things that are not according to their nature. Yeah, everybody. But our main work should be according to our nature. I mean, that's what Krishna says. So that's what should be done. And really, the authority should make sure that that's done. But if they don't, you may have to remind them. Then you may want to think seriously about, you know, your whole life situation. Ultimately, we have to take responsibility for ourselves. Prabhupada said every pilot has to fly their own plane. You can take help from others and instruction from others, but you have to fly your own plane.
So all this material world was created like a billion of years ago? Or
In fact,
it has been created one day.
1.57 billion years.
1.57
billion years.
I don't know.
Because I was doing research for the class today. But it's created and destroyed, created and destroyed, created and destroyed, created and destroyed. There's a cycle of creation. And the material energy is never destroyed. Just like you go on the beach and you take the sand and you make something out of the sand and then the waves smash it. The sand is still there. The sand is not destroyed. Building from the sand is destroyed.
So, but the material energy has been created at some point.
No, material energy is also eternal.
Oh. Okay. So, but
again, when you start thinking, in terms of time and space, you'll reach a point that you stop. You can go so far and then just... Because our view of time and space here is an illusion.
Yeah.
It's not really the way things are. But material energy is eternal, and sometimes it's manifested as this material world, and other times it's just like the sandcastle. Sometimes it's just sand, and other times it's castles and... You ever seen these sculptures people make from sand?
Yeah.
Artwork. So sometimes it's beautiful artwork and other times it's just sand. So the material world is like that. Sometimes it's made into these planets and these bodies and tables and chairs. And then again it becomes just the material energy without any form, without any difference between one thing or another.
I don't understand as well how come the souls who were happy in the spiritual world, they have been like...
Why would we come here?
Yeah.
Well, that's, of course, the main question. Why would I come here? If I had everything perfect, why would I come here? But we do things like that in this life. We have so many examples that we know of people who had, you know, nice marriages and they ran off with some bum. Right? I mean, I know people like that. They had a nice husband, good children, beautiful home, nice relationship even. The relationship wasn't bad. It wasn't that it was a bad. And somehow they fell in love with some bum. You understand? Bum?
No.
Then you ask. Don't just sit there not knowing. Mm-hmm. Then you should ask. A bum, like a very low class person.
A low class. Down.
Yes.
Like a prostitute or something.
Yeah, and they all of a sudden they're gone. They leave their, right? They leave their husband, they leave their family, and they're just on the back of some motorcycle with some dirty. You understand?
Not so much.
Okay. So you might have somebody, they have nice husband, nice children, yeah, nice house. And somehow they get attracted to some dirty criminal man. And they leave their family. Why do they do that? Is there, you can't give, you, it's not like there's a good reason. But I know people who've done this. Don't you know people who've done this? Of course, we all know. Or some man, he has a beautiful wife who's a good cook and clean and loving and wonderful family and good job and everything. And for some prostitute woman, he leaves everything, right? Everything. She doesn't love him, she's just a prostitute. Happens all the time. Why? You can't really say why. Or like, why do people smoke cigarettes? You can't, what is the reason? There's no reason. Nobody sits down and says, well, I'm going to study cigarettes and I think this is a good choice in my life. Nobody does this. Nobody goes to the library and does research and says, this would be a very good thing to do. Why do they do it? If you ask why they do it, there's not really an answer. It's just foolishness. And because we have free will, we can. If you can't do a foolish thing, then there's no meaning. If I say you're free, that means you're free to do something foolish. And we can do things foolish knowing it's foolish. The governments are putting out so much information. Smoking is bad. They're telling you. Smoking is bad. But if a person is thinking, well, not for me. For me, I can smoke and I won't get sick. Everybody else, not me. I'll be okay. Also remember that our fall from the spiritual world, it's not to a human body. Our fall to the spiritual world, Prabhupada says, is as Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is almost spiritual. He says, not a big fall down, very, very, very small fall down. We want to be God, so we get to be God of the universe. We have, Lord Brahma is seeing Krishna, he has service, almost spiritual. And if you're intelligent, after one birth as Lord Brahma, you say, I don't like this. Let me go back to my home. And if you're not intelligent, you say, well, this is not so bad. Because it's not. It's a very small fall down. It's like if you have a nice family and you never drink beer or wine or alcohol, and your parents say, don't drink. And maybe one day you take one little drink. So one little drink, it's not immediately a person drinks one little glass of wine and their life is finished. And so a person can think, oh, I drank, you know, it's not so bad. And it takes time. After some time, they become an alcoholic. It's not in one day. So a fall down is very gradual. Become Lord Brahma, and if you think, oh, that's bad. And then you become attached. And the problem is that once we become attached to the material world, then it's so different. After a person becomes an alcoholic, very difficult. Mm-hmm. And you may say, this was an educated person. educated, rich, so many things. Why did they become an alcoholic lying in the street? But it was always nice. But then to get back up can be very difficult. So it's our situation.
So may I ask something?
Yes.
How to understand, example, if we are in a bad situation, how to understand maybe this Krishna sent to us this situation maybe too close to him more, or this is a reaction of our karma, no? Or this is maybe our bad choice, maybe in, because
all of our bad situations are due to our bad choices.
Mm.
All of them. Because in the spiritual world there's no bad situations. So if a person becomes a drug addict, you understand? Drug addict? Or alcoholic? Okay, if you're an alcoholic, and then you go to a doctor, and the doctor gives you some treatment, and the treatment is painful, who is causing the pain? You or the doctor? Yes, but you could also say it's the doctor. You understand? So I have, by my choices,
mm-hmm.
I have become an alcoholic. That is not the doctor's fault. Then I go to the doctor and I say, I want to give up this alcohol. He says, okay, you have to follow this program. You have to take this medicine. And it may be very painful, very difficult. So if you say, where is the difficulty coming from? Is it coming from me or is it coming from the treatment? You can't really separate that.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming from the treatment, yes. But it's coming from me. So all of my suffering, 100%, all of it is coming from me. None of it is coming from Krishna. Sometimes the things that Krishna does to help us feels very difficult for us. Or I read this story of this boy who wanted to see a cave. You know what is a cave?
No.
So he was exploring, he was looking, and there was a very small tunnel. And he was looking. He got stuck. You understand?
Stuck now.
He couldn't get out. So everybody's looking for him. Where is he? Where is he? Finally, they find him. They had to pull him out. It hurt. A lot. It hurt. So who's causing the pain? The people who are helping him? Or he's causing himself the pain? How can you? You can't answer that question. If I am pulling you out and there's rocks, it's hurt him. Are you going to say, stop pulling me? Then you stay in the hole and you die. But to get you out, there's some pain. So you can use any difficulty in this world to bring you closer to Krishna. And all of our difficulty is our own doing. Because we wouldn't even be in material consciousness by Krishna's desire. That's our desire. But you can use anything to help you come closer to Krishna. I think it's good to see all of our suffering in two ways. To see all of my suffering is Krishna's mercy, and all of my suffering is my responsibility. Both. Both. Because it's both true. It's not that Krishna wants me to suffer. He doesn't. Krishna wants me only to be happy. Krishna does not want me to suffer even one bit at all, ever. He would like it. Krishna would like it if I never had any suffering. So my suffering is completely, 100% my responsibility. And sometimes the way that Krishna is helping me to become happy may be difficult. No, I don't think most. Not most. But sometimes. Not most. Not most. I mean, again, if you think about the alcoholic, so the alcoholic or the person who is smoking, if you say to a person who's smoking, you have to stop smoking, it's very painful. But if you never smoke, it's not painful. I have never smoked, so for me, to not smoke is not painful. There's no pain. If you say, Urmila, you cannot have a cigarette today, I don't feel any pain. Nothing. But if I'm addicted to smoking, then it will be very painful. So if Krishna says, give up sense gratification, that is only painful if we are addicted. That's all. It's not Krishna's instruction that's causing the pain. It's my attachment. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We have more classes with you next week, or will you?
It wasn't on my list.
Oh,
so I don't think so. But I don't know. I don't think so. It's not on my list.